welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. Wait for it, Lindsay. I don't see what's funny about opening at all.
The beautiful thing about being in the studio with you right now is I can't keep a straight face because all John has done is harass me with sexual innuendo all night long.
Everybody who's here tonight knows that the opposite is true. Lindsay seems sweet.
I am sweet. In bed.
Welcome, Lindsay, New York Times famous feminist across the country. What's a good gender neutral position for somebody in high hierarchical power positions?
Oh gosh. Empress?
Does alpha still the alpha female? Can I call you alpha female?
Sure. All yeah, right. Please do.
Of the fabulous feminist Mormon Housewives podcast, blogger extraordinaire Lindsay.
I got best blogger of the year.
Congratulations.
In the Wheaties.
What, right. Did they give you like a plaque?
They should. Yeah.
Welcome. You've been on a few of these before, but it's been a while. It's a rare treat.
And this is my first time in the studio, so I'm excited to be here.
It's a little white.
And a little,
Were you going to say delightsome?
I was, but I realized that is not a racial term that I want to go with. So, yeah, it's really nice. I need to edit that out. I'm going to be eating alive.
There's no editing anymore. Lindsay and I...
Oh, no!
Lindsay, you all know Lindsay has been the editor for how long? So all those weird noises that are in there, this is Lindsay.
Some people like those. They said it was funny.
Nobody likes those.
We took a vote online, and we said that we're not going to bleep out the naughty words anymore, except one.
Except for one.
And even with my male privilege, I'm not allowed to say that word.
Can I just explain to you what I'm looking at right now? I'm sitting on at a table, and there's this big glass vase full of dollar bills.
Giant.
Yeah.
A giant jar.
And it says John Swear Jar on it.
It does, indeed.
And there's a $5 bill in there,
what
too.
What was the $5 bill for?
It was a good night.
You don't want to know.
That's only after one podcast.
Wow.
So I don't know what this was online that people were chastising me. There was a podcast a couple of weeks ago where it got a little raunchy. And after that, I pledged that every time I drop, I say shit or fuck, I'll put a dollar bill in the swear jar.
You guys asked for it. I was going to edit it out so you could keep your children in the room and keep your virtue intact. But whatever. If you guys want to slum it with Potty Mouth John.
Yes, I told Lindsay I got an email from an evangelical today who called me a potty mouth. He said I wasn't doing the Lord's service when I swear. All right. Well, thank you, Lindsay, for being on the podcast
tonight.
I'm
happy to be here.
All right. Sitting to Lindsay's left is Steve. Hi, Steve. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Steve, this is your first time, right?
Yes, sir.
Are you nervous?
A little bit nervous.
It's okay to be nervous when you're new. Well, welcome. Anything you want to say about it? We'll get into why you're here in a little bit.
Okay.
And I want to. Can I push back on him for just a minute?
You can.
I want to know why you didn't like the sound effects. They're hilarious.
They were awful. You expect swear words to have a certain tone to them, so you can tell.
Look at the new guy.
The swear words that come in, and it was chatter and weird stuff, and you just throw the whole thing off.
I am an artist who works in the medium of words, and you are going and putting like Band-Aids over the little tiny penises on Michelangelo's
painting. It's fig leaves.
Right?
Yeah,
it's
fig leaves.
It's not a service.
I'm protecting humanity is what I'm doing.
You are interfering with art.
That's debatable.
Sitting to Steve's left is Charles. Hey, Charles, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here.
You've been here a couple times.
Just a few.
And I'm glad to have, and we'll find out why you're here also tonight. You know, sometimes before these podcasts, we sit down and we like prepare and we put an outline of what we're going to talk about. I'm just realizing we didn't do that. We went out and got some pizza instead. So does that count? So the church is a great big company. I think everybody understands that. And I talked about a couple weeks ago in a podcast, a great podcast, where I talked about things that the ex-Mormons get wrong. And we point out that there's the church, and there's the religion, and then there's the Mormon people, and they're three separate entities. And the church itself kind of can be subdivided into this religious organization, a corporation. And sometimes, of course, the church acts very corporate, and sometimes they act like a church. And in my opinion, that's fine, because I don't think churches necessarily have any special domain, or if a church wants to own property, well, they can own property. This is the United States. But sometimes the church starts doing things that people don't expect a church to do, and they do things that can be a little creepy. And tonight we're going to talk about some of that stuff. So tonight's topic is on the systems or the ways that the church uses technology. For what? For what end? How do we want to say this, Lindsay? To the way the church uses technology to track people?
To follow you.
Well, and I want to preface it with, if you've ever been on any of the ex-Mormon boards or progressive Mormon boards, there's a huge amount of paranoia with people thinking like they're being followed and they're being watched, and someone has an anecdotal story and then it blows up and everybody knows somebody who has heard something about the church, and it, you know, it becomes this big, the church is watching us, they're following us, which is ironic because there's a guy in his car right outside there, the studio right now.
Well, it's absolutely, I think paranoia is the right word. There is an undue amount of stress about this, although it's not completely without foundation. Like there's reason that people are a little bit nervous about that. We'll talk about some of these things as the night progresses. But I use myself as an example. I've been an open, vocal critic for over 10 years now of the church under my own name. And I started criticizing the church under my own name when I still attended. And I only removed my name from the records of the church just 2 years ago or 1 year ago, I think 2011. I have never experienced any sort of pushback from the church or any of its minions in any way that is registered on my radar. I've not seen any. Now, I've had individual members of the church act like douchebags, but more often than not, they're not that way. My interaction with the church has been mostly positive. I've heard the horror stories, but I didn't leave the church or lose my testimony because – why is that funny?
I think it's adorable to hear you say that Mormon rhetoric that you hate that I use.
I didn't lose because anybody behaved poorly. But we do know the church is out there and they're developing systems.
You just lost the spirit, that's all. Right?
I never had it in the first place. So we're going to talk about some of these systems. Now, Charles and Steve, you guys are both come from a technology viewpoint. That's why you're here. So you've had some interaction with these systems. As comfortable as you are, can you give us a kind of a brief sketch of how you've interacted with the church systems? Why should we listen to you?
Yeah, so I've been developing software for a long time, and off and on I've come into projects that have related to the church. One of them that was a number of years ago is when the church first started kind of its foray into the current modern era of its technological advancement, I guess, and you know, make no mistake, they're extremely technologically advanced. They've brought a tremendous amount of money and resources and talent to bear.
Now, when you say technological advance, it's my background is in software and technology too. So, are you saying they're on the cutting edge of technology, or just that they've got a lot of technological shit that they do?
In many ways, they're on the cutting edge, and they're even leading technology in a lot of places.
Is this new? Because I was a clerk. Like, I was a ward clerk.
It was in the last five.
In 2002? No,
yeah.
Earlier than that, 1999, 1998.
Yeah, it's new.
Okay. But
it's
one of
new.
I just want to cut in and say one of the things that I've heard, one of the rumors online, is that ward clerks now are using Facebook to track their members. Mm. And I've actually had that confirmed by ward clerks. They're encouraged to use Facebook.
Well, now this is a key distinction that we're going to have to make through the night, because their wards have always tracked individuals. Every missionary knows about the area book, which is this book. Who's been on a mission recently?
Mm-hmm.
Come on up.
Okay, I actually served as a ward clerk up until...
How recently?
I asked to be released in April of last year.
So okay, good. We got new fish.
Fresh meat.
Okay, so speaking to that, when it came to tracking members, so for the 2 years that I was a ward clerk, anytime you moved somebody out of the ward, so somebody left the ward, when you moved them out of the system, you had to put in what their new address was. In the church, that was a required field. But many times, people would move out, and you didn't know them even when they were there, and so they moved out. You have no clue where they moved to. So in order to leave that field blank of their next known address, you had to click a box that said that the bishop authorized moving them out with no known address. And right about the time that I asked to be released, about 3 or 4 months before I was released, the church came out with a new system where in order to move somebody out of the ward without an address, you had to go, I think there were about 12 things that you had to do. And you had to follow up check with their known relatives, any relatives that they had in the ward or any known relatives that lived elsewhere. You had to email them and also check on Facebook, social media to try to track them down. You had to email them. You had to call them. I can't remember all of the things I should have jotted that down.
When I was a clerk 12 years ago, we would get calls from the missing member department, and there would be
wonderful distant, little sisters,
distant relatives. You know, and as a call, the phone would ring. They knew when I was there, right? They knew, and the phone would ring, and they would want us to go like harass distant relatives. Sometimes if they were even non-members that they, for whatever reason, knew were in the ward, and ask them where people live.
Yes, and that is still occurring. The membership clerk that was serving with me, I would get those letters and I would pass them to him. And he's like, oh, shoot, I got to follow up with another one of these. And he would have to call these relatives to try to, but it never worked. I mean, nobody was willing to give the contact information. And that's why the church came out with this extensive list of things that you had to verify. You had to say, I've done all 12 of these things on the list to try to find where this person moved to before they would actually accept you moving them out with no address.
Great, thanks.
Thanks, Facebook.
Okay, so before we go any deeper, Charles, you want to give us your background working with the church?
Yeah, so I actually worked for the church and for BYU for about 8 years. Most of the time that I spent there, I was working on the their internal help desk, so answering a lot of questions about basic software stuff, but I was also got a little bit of exposure into some of the proprietary systems that they used for tracking membership and whatnot. And then the last 6 months, I actually worked in the membership department doing support for MLS and working with the financial and membership databases, and got a little bit more exposure into that that realm of what they're doing.
Okay, great. So let's start from small to big. Let's start with the dead people. So the church started its really membership tracking effort, and by the way, if you go way back, the church was a record keeping people or organization, and then it quit being a record-keeping organization, or would destroy records because the federales were looking for them to find out who all the cohabs were. So there's a great big gap in church records for marriages and baptisms and all this stuff. And they were a little bit more lax about those things in the day. There's a great story about Heber Kimball, who at one point, I think Brigham Young chided him for not having baptized his boys. So he rounded up like a whole posse of his kids, like 20 or 30 boys, and marched them down to the river and baptized them all at once, which the story is telling. I mean, he didn't have 38-year-olds. These were kids from 20 down to whatever. And they weren't necessarily as strict about it. You know, if a kid was 10 or 11 and hadn't been baptized, whatever. So this record keeping sort of crept back in, but it is a necessary element of genealogy. Otherwise you just keep baptizing the same people over and over again. now.
Well, you still do that.
Well, there was a I met a temple worker years ago, and I can't remember the guy's name. He was an ex-Mormon, and he worked in the system, and I don't know what he did, but he claimed that every name was processed five times in a temple. So it would go to the Jordan River Temple, and then they would do the work five times, and then pass it off to the next temple and do it five times. They'd pass it off to the next temple and do it five times. And he said that the spiel they got was that ensured that if the wicked people were in the temple, you know, the masturbators and things were in the temple when they shouldn't be, then we would have insurance, you know, because we do the work 30 times.
Still, with the number of people going through, there's one or two is going
to
slip.
That's why you have to have at least 10, because it's, 90%, right?
Because a lot of those are going down in the Provo Temple, and that's right across from MTC.
That's true. That's true.
There's a lot of masturbators going into that temple.
So the problem when you have a database that's open, like the genealogy records, is you just get a lot of crap in there, right? And anybody who's done genealogy a little bit knows that those databases are just garbage.
Like FamilySearch.org, which is so organized in its resources. Just type in Joseph Smith and see how many Joseph Smith genealogies will pop up.
Yeah, my family is really into genealogy. And my grandfather died in 1989, I believe. And for some reason, my mother in 1990, like a year later, was going down to check his records. And I don't know how she found this out. I don't know if they give this information today. But she came home and she was furious because he was baptized and born in the covenant and had spent the last 30 years of his life as a temple worker. But his baptism now showed on his records that he had been baptized vicariously in like the Jordan River Temple or whatever in 1990, and it wiped out his records. And she said not only that, it had been done five times. This is a guy who spent his whole life like in Weber County and was a lifelong member. And in the 6 months after the year-long, you know, there's a waiting period before you can do work, he had been baptized five different times in the temple. And it's five different people that submitted his work. And from what I hear, this is really common. Like people get baptized over and over and over again.
Well, it's kind of funny that you gave that example because it kind of cast light on what's important to the church, and it's not genealogy, it's not the saving of souls, it's the increase in wealth, the increase in power that they're gaining. So yeah, they don't put a lot of money and they don't put a lot of investment into the genealogy.
Oh, you're arguing
putting their money elsewhere.
You're saying they neglect that database.
Right, that's whatever. That's open source database. You know, that's people going in and putting them in and keeping the members
happy.
Well,
from my perspective, that's about keeping people busy.
Right, keeping them busy, keeping them doing their stuff. They don't care. Grandpa, who cares, right? That's not important to them, right?
If he gets baptized 100 times,
that's what's important.
That's great. People are saving their souls in the temple.
Exactly. What's important is the other side, and that's the side people don't readily see. And if you think about it, you know, this church has, you know, purportedly 19 million members, and they've got, if you go to LDS.org, you can sign up with an account, and that actually goes into the LDS directory services. And if you happen to get employed by the LDS Church, it's that same account. They're tracking everybody in the same authentication, the same secure system. And they've got these, you know, SaaS systems out there that track just vast and vast amounts of data that they keep incredibly tight control over, because you're talking about billions of dollars. The genealogy stuff is nothing. The baptism is nothing. You know, that's people have already paid to get into the temple, right? You know, they're just giving them a show. It's the other side of it that's where in my opinion, this is my paranoid side coming out. This is where the insidious side of it lies. Not in, you know, screw it, somebody lost their baptismal records, whatever. They don't care about that, you know. Ultimately, I think the leaders know that when you're dead, you're dead. You know, I think they know that's not, they're working the other side of it. That's just a front they're putting on. You know, that's a face to their product, I think, but that's kind of what they're selling. But the technology that they're building and fostering is much more advanced than that, and it's not something that they're flippant with. They're not allowing these databases to become corrupt.
Okay, excellent. So let's move to so we talk about the dead, and I think you're foreshadowing where we're going as we move down the line. Yeah, I think that database is open. It's sort of a show pony. It's full of errors. I've said this before. The last time I went to the temple, the name was Mr. Smith, and it said birth circa 1538, no death date. And I was like, is this even a person? Mm-hmm. That's a game that's being played. Now let's talk about membership records. Now, the fascinating thing about membership records is I obviously, on this podcast, I have an interest in church stuff. Three different times in the past 5 or 10 years, I have tried to buy a subscription to The Ensign, the magazine. I can't do it because I do not know my membership number, and it sends me through these loops of trying to identify who I am and tie me into stuff, and they won't take my money. Now, given what you just said and what everybody says about the church, the fact that they don't want to take my $10 to give me the Ensign, on two fronts, $10. And on the second front, this is somebody who's going to read the Ensign, which is full of God's word, which would obviously convert me to the true and living gospel. So they don't want to do that unless they know who I am. This points to the point highlights the point you're making, which is they value these membership records a lot. So much so they're not going to sell me a magazine.
Well, I just want to say that I don't think it's as nefarious as you guys are saying. The church is a corporation. They function as a corporation. What are all corporations doing right now? They are tracking the data of their consumers.
Absolutely.
That's just what they're doing. I think that they think it's practical and it's responsible.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the point is they want to keep these membership records very tight. And now this is where things get interesting for ex-Mormons, because a lot of ex-Mormons kind of obsess about their membership records. Let us be clear, in the United States today, you are being tracked, well, in this globe, by all sorts of organizations doing all sorts of things. They're tracking your click-throughs. They're tracking everything they possibly can about you. And to your point, Lindsay, the church really isn't exceptional in this case. If you compare them to other American corporations that have the same sort of profit margins, they're behaving in a similar way. I think where people would push back and say, yeah, but you're not just supposed to be another PepsiCo. You're supposed to be the one true living church. But as I point out in the last podcast, you're assuming a lot if you say that God doesn't want to make a lot of money.
And maybe God cares about what you're doing and where you are. And since we believe that we're one heart, one mind, we really, and this is often abused, most often abused, that we take care of one another. I mean, I don't know how many of you heard that story, but when I was in teaching in young women's as a leader just a few years ago, we taught the story maybe three times about how the leader would go into the ocean on a Sunday morning when his, you know, lost sheep were surfing, and he would pull them out of the ocean and bring them back. And we were to do the same. So I feel like a lot of members.
Wait, did you say lost sheep surfing?
Surfing.
They're in the ocean. Sheep go into the ocean.
You know what? That story probably didn't translate very well. If you were breaking the Sabbath and you're not in young men's, the leaders are, like, committed leaders go in the ocean and pull those
on their own surfboard. They're so
committed
that they will go out there.
Do you feel the burning? I do. So, yeah, I mean, we were told to be that dedicated of a leader. And
I have yet to have an Elders Quorum president come and grab me out of the bar on Sunday. I'm hurt.
Are you trying to say he's drinking with you?
Sorry. Well,
like a good Mormon.
He should be there drinking to bring me back to church, right?
Agreed. So the records, we've got people who know the records in here who've seen them, and I can tell you about what they were like several years ago. The records have your basic information. They're very masculine. They have all the priesthood checkbox down the side, and then it has an area for annotation. And it has brief notes, and there's what is known as an annotated. It does say if you're disfellowshipped or excommunicated on the basic record that a clerk will see. Getting our most recent clerk back to the mic here.
The records that I saw, where the person was, because I did have to do a few disciplinary councils, and so I had to do the paperwork for them. After the disciplinary council went through, the notes that were put on the membership record, I actually could not see. Even though I had typed them, after they were done, the only person that can view that information is the bishop and higher up.
So there's, from what I understand, there's two levels. You're right. There's the level that's exposed. Did you not see any records that say disfellowshipped or excommunicated on there?
I don't believe so.
So that's probably been a change since, and I could be misremembering, but they would say
I could be misremembering as well. So
there's a bishop side where they can see notes, and one of the chief things, from my understanding, that they track on those is actually fraud. If you think about it from a church perspective, there's two things that they're most concerned about on membership records. One are known child abusers, and the other are fraudsters. And there's a lot of people who will try to bamboozle the church by going from ward to ward to ward, getting rebaptized, getting welfare services. Then, you know, when they get found out, then they move on. So the church tracks people like this who are trying to rip the church off. So from my understanding, there's the bishop's notes, but even those don't have a lot of information in them. That there's a and the old records used to just say call such and such.
So they
still have that in there. And so there's annotated records. There's marginal stories I hear from ex-Mormons that talk about their ward, like something happening and then their ward doing things to them. My guess is that's usually word of mouth. I think the church is really tight with data, and the clerks and even the bishops are not getting that much information from what the church itself is tracking. And I think really by what I've heard and what I've seen, those things that they're tracking on the membership records are those sexual predators, fraudsters, people.
And they're usually men, right? From what I've heard too, it's normally priesthood holders. I mean, they're more concerned with the priesthood office than, say, a woman.
Well, for good reason, which is those guys are going to more likely to get into these leadership. You know, like men are the only ones who have access to money, right? We don't allow women to serve as clerks.
Women are bad at math. Right, Lindsay?
It's absolutely true.
So,
I'm a feminist, I can tell you.
One thing that surprised me was the lack of information. We had somebody move into the ward who had been in a disciplinary council in a previous ward, and actually two wards previous, and the bishop in my ward, he had to make several phone calls before he could finally find somebody that had any information about it at all. Because as far as the typed, you know, the written record, there was basically nothing. So it was kind of surprising to me.
I will say that I've heard stories of hundreds of women, and I don't know if this goes with men as well, but hundreds of women who were called or alluded to being sexual predators if they had been disfellowshipped in some way. So whatever the notes were, it was alluding that this woman is trouble, she has these issues with men, and she's a sexual predator in the ward.
Well, given the culture of victim blaming, you know, in the church, that doesn't surprise me at all that, you know, if the Relief Society president sleeps with the second counselor in the bishopric, she's going to get a black mark saying she seduced him, da da da. I mean, this is common to happen.
Well, and also to his point about the you know, having to make calls to get this information, that doesn't necessarily speak to a systemic lack of the information. Just like having some information doesn't speak to them having that information. I guess it could have come word of mouth, whatever. It could have simply been a security somebody didn't check the right box, or somebody, you know, there could have been his login wasn't correct, or somebody didn't update some.
Because you think, again, all the number of units there are, and the clerks are all volunteer, and they don't get any real training. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing that a lot of these systems are there to keep them from putting garbage in.
And you know, the lay clergy in the church is treated differently than the upper echelon. And so the systems you'll see a general authority use, or you'll see, you know, these corporate level people use are much better than the clerks are going to get, and they're much better than the general populace is going to get, I think.
So from George, you can tell me if I have this wrong. So once again, this is from years ago. Any clerk can enter anybody into the ward directory. And it was designed this way, so if Lindsay is a member and she marries Bob, and Bob's not a member, they can still put him in so he's in the system, so he shows up in the ward directory, which is not – there's nothing sinister about that. And you can put – you can enter children in, you can do whatever. And once a child is blessed, you send off – and then you get a full tracking number. But you can just put names in the system for children who aren't blessed. I just think you don't have the same tracking number.
So when children were blessed, what we would do is you would put in their name, their birth date, the information of when they were blessed, and then you would put in who their parents were. And then that would get, when you do a send receive and it ships it off to, you know, the church's servers, then it would come back and it would have a membership number attached. Is that your question?
I just know there was something that basically when you became blessed, they would track that blessing. I'm sure what was happening is they were creating a record for the particular blessing that was happening.
Absolutely, yes.
So what the church basically does is they will track you. In the church's system, you are a member of the church, baptized or not, basically till you're 18. And you get tracked as such. And if you cross that meridian and you don't get baptized, then they do something to your record. Now the local units can still track you. This is what's funky. Like if I were to get excommunicated, my membership record would be hidden. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the local units are not going to see my. If I resigned, let's say I resigned from the church, my record gets hidden. No one's going to see it. But there's nothing to stop Clerk Joe Blow from then going and creating another record on me and saying John lives over here. I don't know that the system will like spit it back and say, sorry, you can't do that, because the clerks have the ability to create local records. So I think sometimes that it's from stories I've heard, what's probably happened is a well-meaning clerk or whatever and saying, no, the Smiths, they're in the war, and they recreate another local record. But those are local records, and those are not ones that are being tracked necessarily by Salt Lake. Once again, I don't know how all their data structures work. But they're not; those records are not collated against a central tracking ID, in my understanding.
If I remember right, a membership number did get generated for those.
For every person that just got put in.
They got put in, but it was a kind of a temporary tracking number that did not get transmitted back to Salt Lake.
Okay.
So, you know, there would be a tracking number with that person. So, you know, it wouldn't be like there was a big gap of missing numbers there, but
when they didn't show up in the stat report, those
right.
People did not show up. So if you had 100 members and you added Joe Blow, it would still show 100 members, even though your ward director would show 101 people.
So my parents were serving a mission, and my dad told me this story. A guy that the missionaries taught, he decided to get baptized. He got baptized. The paperwork came to the mission office. The mission office created this record of him being baptized. They put in his information. It then got shipped off to Salt Lake. Salt Lake kicked it back and said, this guy was baptized 6 years ago. He's already a member.
Right.
And so speaking to your point about creating a record for somebody who's already a member or was a member and then resigned, I think it would eventually get kicked back. The church would still retain a record of that person.
And this is how we know that people who resign never get removed from the database. First, let's be clear. This is the United States. There's freedom of speech. Anybody can put you into a database at any time. There's nothing you can do about that. You have no legal right to privacy of people tracking you. And once again, all sorts of corporations are tracking you. So before you get your panties in a wad over your violation of your right, just realize that everybody's tracking you all the time, and this is nothing special. But if somebody says, like, your name removed from the records of the church, that's the phrase everybody uses, that does not happen at all. There is a bit somewhere that somebody's flipping, and they're changing the Y to an N, and you're still being tracked. And the reason the church does that is the church requires people who resign to have first presidency approval to rejoin the church. So they want to avoid me moving over to another ward, just getting interviewed by the elders and getting baptized. And so there's no question as to the fact that the church is still tracking people. I moved this last year. In previous moves, I have had to go through all my credit cards and all my banks and update my addresses. This last move, I did that not once. I'm telling you that every credit card company, every bank account, every retirement account I had just figured it out. And so before, as we get into like conspiracies here in the next half of this podcast, just realize that that's kind of spooky. Now, I did change my address with the post office, and people subscribe to it, and the church subscribes to that. But they have good ways of figuring this stuff out and exchanging all this data, and everywhere you're putting your address in and all that kind of stuff is known information. So the church, Steve, as you were talking about being on the edge of technology, is deploying all of these methods everybody else is to track their membership and track everybody else.
Right, they are. But again, I think we're seeing the public-facing side of it, right? We're seeing, and you're talking about, this one bit of what information is being disseminated to the wards, what information is being disseminated to the clerks that are unpaid volunteers, you know, whatever, and they're seeing a very small amount of the information that's actually being tracked, and it's not just information about individuals, you know, it's aggregate information about communities, about areas, they're.
Yeah, let's take a review and say what does the church know about its membership in terms of its record keeping? They know how much tithing you pay and when you pay it. Because that has to be reconciled every single Sunday. So they go through. They know the method you pay your tithing. They know if you're paying by cash or by check or whatever else. They know.
I would just add to that, only if you are contributing to the local unit. So the church offices will take your payments, credit card, EFT, that type of stuff. But
anonymously?
No.
What does the church know? You're saying the local unit may not know if you're paying tithing.
Right. Yeah. So
there is a rich person loophole, which means you make a shitload of money, and you don't want the ward clerk to know how much bank you're bringing in. You can pay your tithing directly to the church. The church knows. It's still on your record.
Right.
And then you're going to get in one of these other databases we're going to talk about in a minute here. But they're still tying all that stuff together in your record.
Yeah, but when you come to tithing settlement at the end of the year, your bishop, your clerk – is not going to see any tithing at all, and all you have to do is say, "Oh, I paid to the church."
But they'll know that you paid it. It will show up that you are a tithe payer because they have to do it for their temple recommend.
There's no financial data that comes back if you pay it straight to the church.
What I heard is they will send it back to your local bishop that you are a tithe payer, but they don't give you the amount, so you don't settle it out. That way they know for the questions that they need. I could be wrong about that. That's just the way that I understood it.
So,
but I'm a woman. I'm not allowed to touch the money.
I don't know. I have never made enough money to. So the now the reason I stopped buying garments is because they wouldn't sell them to me because their system was down. They wanted my unit number and they said our system's down. We're not selling them, so I walked over to Target and bought my new underwear. So they track the purchase of your underclothing. They track the purchase of any church supplies you get from distribution center.
Can I just throw in just a humorous little side note on that? So right as I was leaving church employment, they were working on this database, and it was basically the recommend authorized garment system or something. I can't remember exactly what the name of it was, but the acronym was the RAGS.
Awesome. So basically everything that's being tied to that number, which I told you at the beginning of the podcast, I couldn't buy the improvement era because I didn't have my unit assignment. They're tracking all of that information. Now, let's be clear that local units can track all sorts of things independently. There was this kind of scandal that blew up a couple months ago where some clerk or something was putting notes in a Google map about the local people, and some of them were kind of, they'd be like, her husband, I don't know, I can't remember, but it was quasi-personal information, but they forgot to make it a private map, so it was a public map, and somebody found it and snapped a screenshot of it. Well, there's nothing that the church obviously is more savvy than to do something like that. This is a local unit, a local doofus who is putting this into a map and to be used among ward council. And let's be clear, ward council sits and gossips about everybody in the ward. That's what ward council does. It's under the guise of help. Oh, yeah, she had chlamydia. Can we bring her a casserole? You know, but we know what it's all about.
Ward council killed my testimony.
Yeah, it's you don't want to see the sausage made. So we have this bubble, the sphere of the church tracking everything they can about you. And you know, the church has tried on multiple occasions to track temples. When I first went to the temple in 91, 92, there were still barcodes on them because they had just killed that system. They were trying to do scanners on to know when every – the church would love that information, know who's doing temple attendance. And a couple of years ago, they tried to implement a system again. Is it still going – are there barcodes on the current recommends?
Yep.
And those are tied back to your
– Well, they're not using that to track your temple attendance at all.
Why do you think that?
It's just to – so that they can activate or deactivate the recommends as needed.
Yeah.
I'm being sarcastic in their not tracking the temple attendance. It's only so that they can deactivate the temple recommends.
There was a story of someone that we know who recently tried to attend the temple with his wife, and because he was having issues with the current leadership, she goes to the temple and they wouldn't let her in. She gives her little barcode and they wouldn't let her in. And it created this big, you know, kerfuffle, and they ended up fixing it. They called the stake president, and he realized that that was wrong to punish her for her husband's sins.
But, so the stake president has a kill switch?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have been before.
And the ward too.
I have been where I have forgot my recommend. And I think it was like, it was a big deal. I can't remember.
I got to interrupt. Does this work? Oh, you mean I can't go to the temp? I can't sit? Don't throw me in the briar patch. Don't.
I was like in tears because I think it was a wedding we were supposed to go to, and it was in Salt Lake, and we had to go all the way home. And yeah, I'm like, sucks. I promise I'm worthy. So I'm trying to convince them, and the poor old man was being really nice, but they were able to call my stake president and get my record number. And because I was like, I'll give you all my information. I'll tell you everything about me. So I found that weird because I know of people who get other people's recommends and go all the time that haven't been to church in a long time.
There's not like a photo ID or a fingerprint or a retinal scan or something?
Who's the dude online that – is it Mike Norton?
New name Noah.
We're not supposed to say the name.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, the guy that goes to all the temples and films.
Mike Norton.
He's really proud of it, yeah.
Yeah. What about him?
I'm just saying, he goes all the time and they don't stop him. So.
Well, I mean, if you go, there's like a cadre of 86-year-olds sitting there around these computers. The biggest reason it's hard to get in the temple is there's a lot of beef you have to like maneuver around.
I'm just saying there's no fly list for the temple. His picture doesn't pop up with a big red X and say, don't
look at
the
We'll talk about the no-fly list in a little bit. There is one.
Back to my point of where do the priorities of the organization lie. It's not necessarily on keeping unworthy people out of the temple, right? They don't care about that. If they cared about that, then that it's very easy to put systems in place that could do that.
Well, let's face it. If they kept unworthy people out of the temple,
nobody
would
go, right?
The temple building program would grind to a halt. We wouldn't have four temples in the South Valley.
The temple building program probably wouldn't, but the temple attendance would.
Well, that's a good point, yeah. So, so that's the first level of paranoia from ex-Mormons. You are being tracked, and there's nothing you can do about it. Get used to it. The second level of paranoia is the Church Strengthening the Members Committee. Let's talk about those guys for a little bit. The Church has openly acknowledged this thing exists, and there's a lot of rumors that go around about it. What the Strengthening the Members Committee is it's a news clipping service. To track people who are saying negative things or otherwise in the press. And it really began so professors and news people and stuff like that who were quasi-professional Mormons, so the church wouldn't be blindsided by them. So they would, and it started really as a clipping service. It'd be this people who'd go through the New York Times, or whatever, and they'd look for.
I thought it had to do with polygamy as well, fundamentalism.
Well, the church has always been paranoid about the cohabs.
They were tracking them.
Yeah, they've always tracked them. But you're saying it grew out of that. That could be.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But obviously, you know, when we had like in the 90s, when there were the purgings at BYU and the September 6 and all these other people, that these people were being tracked for what they've said. Now, we know that the church has actually extended that program, and they actually track not only people who say negative things about the church, but they track people who say positive things about the church. What the church basically does, and search engines and new technology have made this possible, the church can scan, once to get your name in the database, they say you're a person of interest, be it because you're a critic or because, I don't know, you're Bill Maher or whatever. They track all these people because they want to know everything that Bill Maher is saying. They want to know everything that Oprah is saying. They want to know all this sort of stuff. So they track all of this stuff in these relational databases, so they have all of that data.
Sorry. You kind of caught me off guard. I was looking up something else as well. But, yeah, so one of the projects that I did work on was actually this influential members database for the PR department. And it was – the sole purpose of that was to – track influential members, but also their interactions with non-members or influential non-members, so that, you know, if Oprah decided to say something that could be a good topic for some type of church fodder, they could, you know, get in and go, oh, hey, John Huntsman, go over and talk to Oprah and, you know, let her know that we're really not that weird or whatever. It was, you know, kind of a fledgling project while I was there and as I left. But as far as I know, it's still out there, still going strong, and only getting bigger.
And you saw this pattern actually blow up in Prop 8. The church has been doing this for a long time. If you remember, there's the old Romney letter, Mitt's father.
Yeah.
What's his name? Romney. George Romney. That he was actually sent a letter where the church tried to influence him, and he let it go public. He accidentally leaked it, and it's out there. So the church has long tried to exert its influence. Matter of fact, you know, it's January 2014 right now. The church, 4 days ago, 5 days ago, released a cartoon on its website about how the liquor laws are just great, and that was by Elder Christofferson. The legislative session opened yesterday, and the same guy gave the opening prayer. Anybody missed the signal? The church released a video. Christofferson explains what the church's position on the liquor laws are. Liquor laws are a controversial thing in the state of Utah because it impacts some tourism and other dollars. And who opens the session? This is not a coincidence. So the church has long practiced this influence of people, and it's very important that they know. There's stories around, probably some of them apocryphal, but probably not, about the Osmonds sort of being pushed one way or the other and giving out Book of Mormons to different people. And I think, Charles, you were saying that they actually track gifts and things in these databases?
Right, yes.
So if the church gives this genealogy record to George Bush, then they make a record of it and they track it and see what happens with it. So what I'm going with Prop 8 is they've long had this thing where they call up people. When we know noted things where this has happened. It happened with Claudia Bushman, with Exponent 2. It happened with Laura Thatcher Ulrich. Both these women have admitted that the church called them and told them to simmer down. So they take influential Mormons and they call them and they ask them to do this or that or the other. So the church took that pattern into California and it sort of backfired on them. Steve Young and his wife are an example where they didn't take too kindly to it, and they were very political in how they worded it. But reading between the lines of what these guys were saying, they were telling the church to back off. To stop this influence peddling. But these systems and these sophisticated databases are there tracking you, and you can bet that when you go to grad school in Harvard or you get these positions, you're getting into those databases and the church is tracking your progress.
Well, and I just also want to say from the blogging world, which is where I'm at, it's interesting to see women bloggers who start off as Mormon mommy bloggers, is what we call them, and the ones that get popular get employed with the church.
You mean they get job offers?
They get job offers, yeah, and that's happened several times that I know of. And likewise, we've heard also that from several places, including the church themselves, that they read our blogs, they read our Twitter feeds, they're paying attention to what we do. The big scare going on right now, if anyone's in a Facebook group, is some Yahoo is going on and taking screen caps of what people are saying and turning them into like the honor code office at BYU, getting those kids in trouble or whatever, and it creates this huge panic. But what we've actually heard is the church actually has people in all these groups keeping quiet. They don't take pictures. They just kind of monitor to see what the conversation, how it's going and what's going on. And it makes sense. I mean, some of the things that have caused the church a lot of headaches in the last few years, the gay rights activism, the wear pants to church day, the ordained women, those all started in these Facebook groups.
We have to wear pants to church now?
Yes, you do. I know it's difficult.
What about underpants?
That's optional. I don't think there has been a movement yet. So
yeah, and I know of a couple different cases just that I'm personally acquainted with where there have been kind of on-the-fence Mormons who are doing nefarious things who their stake president calls them in, and somebody has clearly handed the stake president sometimes things that are pretty hard to tease out, like figuring out who owns a particular domain when that domain is private. It can be done, but it takes a lot of work. And the fact that the church, on a hunch, or whoever it is that's supplying this information to the church, is rooting this information out. There are stories out there from people I know. So,
but it's usually vigilante, right? It's some guy that...
It's hard to say, because the church got its hand caught in the cookie jar back in the early 90s when they got caught directly feeding information down to the stake presidents, when by the church handbook of instruction at the time, I haven't looked at this in the latest one, they would say... discipline is completely a local matter. This is what the church would say all the time, that we don't get involved in it. But they've been caught doing that. And in some of these cases that I know about recently, the stake presidents are more savvy and they're tight-lipped about where they got the information. And which is kind of, it's kind of anti-church discipline. Say, okay, well, where, what are you, you know, it's sort of the secret evidence sort of stuff. But it's obvious that somebody's out there tracking this and getting it to the right people.
Or doing what the Lord wants you to do.
That is true. They do have the power of discernment. Also,
I was going to say it's the Holy Spirit.
We can't eliminate it. What does God need with a starship, and what does God need with a database? I guess it's the same question. So we have them tracking different people. Now, our good friend John DeLynn, although he's fairly tight-lipped about it for some reason, he was a project manager for the church's general authority tracking system, or no, general authority candidate tracking system, which I find to be quite fun. So, and I think I've said this before on the podcast. I asked John DeLynn what it did, and he looked at me in the eyes and said, exactly what you think it does. So what I think it does is they take prominent people who are accountants and lawyers and professors
men.
And men, and who are prominently in their career, and then they enter them in, and they track their career just like they do with these people who meet with Oprah. And they track them over time, so they have a candidate list that gets narrowed down, and then it's not coincidence that stake presidents are not chosen locally. I've thought about that very much, that these people from church headquarters will zip in, sometimes from thousands of miles away. They'll interview everybody, and then through inspiration, they pick the guy they want. Lindsay, you're smiling.
No, it's just making me think, and this is purely speculative, but it seems that a lot of the women in higher up leadership are usually family members or friends of so-and-so and so-and-so.
Well, a lot of the men, too, but yeah, particularly with the women. That's
so I don't know if they're being tracked either, or if it's just...
Some of them are even roommates.
Describe what he just did there, Lindsay.
What are you laughing at? They are. Some of them are roommates.
No, nobody can see that, Lindsay.
They just live next door to each other.
No, they live in the same house.
I can't say what I'm thinking, but there's been a lot of discussion about this lately online. That's all I'm going to say. Here's what I'm going to say to all the good folks listening out there. Every time John says a swear word, you guys donate $3 to fill up this tip jar.
Well,
so.
I didn't say any swear words.
You said two tonight so far. Three.
Well, I'm putting a dollar in. I don't know. You must be thinking dirty thoughts right now because you're thinking about swears.
You guys don't know the hand actions I just saw John do. It was a little inappropriate. That's all I'm going to say. It's at least $2.50.
I'll put $2 in for my hand sign. All right. So we've got the church.
No editing at all now, huh?
We got the church tracking people of note. We got the church tracking people who are going to be general authorities. We've got the church tracking the common membership, magazine subscriptions, everything. You're getting baptized for the dead. So what other systems did you guys observe?
You want to go?
Do.
Go ahead and go. Let's see. There was one interesting one that I observed. Just kind of the genesis of it. I didn't actually work on the implementation of it. So I was able to see some of the early meetings and sit in on some of those. That was basically what they'd done. They gathered all this research about it was bishops and how much work they do throughout the week, and come to find out that a bishop doing his job and full time job, a family. Doing his bishop work, it turned out he needed 36 hours a day in order to do what they expected him to do as far as managing his bishop duties. And so the project that was being spooled up that I saw wasn't to somehow mitigate that or distribute that. It was to give him tools so it wouldn't take him quite as long to do it. So they're tracking that. They're tracking who the bishop's meeting with, how long the bishop's meeting,
how are they tracking that?
I don't know the mechanism that they get the information in.
Well, I guess if the clerk,
I know they have a schedule system. I know the bishop schedules who's coming in. There's a calendar system. They've got ways of gathering data, and it's interesting as I think about it, and as I process this over the years. You look at the issues with the NSA, and here's my paranoia coming again. You look at the issues with the NSA and the heat that's on them now in the news and the information they're tracking. And, any normal, non-paranoid person, not like myself apparently, would think it's benign. They're tracking phone numbers that I call. They're not tracking what I'm saying, right? They're just tracking who I'm communicating with, who my Facebook friends are, who my Twitter feeds are going to, who my emails are going to, not the content, right? They don't need that. That's just frivolous. That's just chatter, right? They're more interested in who's talking to who, who's communicating with who the network of people are. And I've got theories that stretch back to the beginning of the church, even the Joseph Smith era. If you look at what the church is as an organization, they don't have a product. They're not manufacturing anything. They're not selling anything, right? They're doing what? What are they doing? Except managing people's relationships. And you look at some of the letters that Joseph Smith wrote to his liaisons over the years, and how he was, essentially what today would be a PM on Facebook. Joseph Smith was writing a letter, Emma's going to be gone such and such a time, sneak in the back door, And I think he was kind of on the cusp of understanding where you could work into somebody's life to really get a hold on them and really, and really capitalize on that rather than just selling them soda pops. Everybody always puts the church in comparison with Coke or McDonald's. There's these huge companies out there. Well, they're selling soda pop, right? What's the church selling? What's the church doing? How is the church adding value?
But how does the church – I see what you're saying, but how does the church benefit from this? So they have all this data, and the problem with data is you can get overwhelmed by it. Now, I spent – 7 right. years working for police data systems. Mm-hmm. So I know about a lot of the databases out there. Right. And like NCIC, which is the big tracking system is estimated by the federal government 60% accurate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's kind of scary, right?
It's not great. And it's an old system. It started up, 20, 30 years ago, something.
It's still old. So
we're gaining in sophistication. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, in the past, in the 80s, 90s, you mentioned the Romney letter in, I looked it up real quick, 1954, lest anybody thinks I have a good memory. And what they were doing there, and I think that speaks to the level of sophistication they had back then. They could send messages, they could send mail, they could interact with the very highest level, the highest profile people.
Well, this is right? What makes sense to me for the, like these like the church wants to know who's talking to Oprah. That mm-hmm. makes a lot of
right.
sense to me. The ex-Mormons who get paranoid that the church right. is like tracking, you know, what
right.
porn sites are going to. The church
right.
doesn't care about
they don't
these
care
people.
About that.
But
right.
but the church is obsessed and always has been with its public image.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they would track Bill Maher, whoever, that makes perfect sense to me
right.
because they
right.
just they're like a teenage girl on Facebook right. wanting to know what everybody's saying.
Right. And at the time, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they didn't have the technical capacity to track every individual. Now they do.
Now they can, right?
They can see all this stuff, and they've got the capacity to manage that now. Whether they're currently using it perfectly is up for debate, but they definitely have, or they're gaining that capacity. You know, I mean, they can bounce. I was at the Leonardo Museum, and they had a presentation on there. Somebody did it on an iPad that you could go and log in your Facebook and me. You know, I'm not paranoid. I do it, and then it just branches out and it shows everybody who you're connected with, everybody who you know. And it was just a little art thing, whatever, and it put in a tree and just shows all these different people that you're connected to and how strong the connection is. How often do you private message them, type of thing? How often do you Do they post likes to what you're saying, you know? And that has value, and it has a tremendous amount of value. Not directly as far as, oh, this guy's against the church, because frankly they probably don't care about that. They're dealing in the masses, right? They want and you know, speaking from my experience, when I left the church, you know, 18 years ago, the level of ostracization that I had afterwards was unreal. I mean, I was alone for, you know, 18 years, just alone.
They still do that, by the way.
Right, they still do that. And they don't do it, you know, you'll ask anybody and they'll say, no, we don't shun. You know, but the church very clearly controls these relationships. And it makes it very difficult. And some of the most apparent thing or some of the most visible things that you can see about people and you know I could walk up my and down my street and just look at the members and tell you who a full tithe payer is.
Shunning is a great point.
Seeing how they interact with people.
Shunning's been with us for 50,000 years, right? That's not a new technology. But I remember what was it, about 6 or 7 years ago, where Elder Ballard invited the members to go out online and start using those tools. And then we got a bunch of like 16-year-old girls putting up YouTube videos and the whole thing sort of backfired on the church. So they came out and they retrenched. But now they're doing it again. I have on the one hand this idea that the church is getting more and more sophisticated in tracking all this and deploying all it. Like, church has lots of money. Church has lots of connections. I mean, BYU graduates love to go work for NSA and for FBI and all these things. And they can bring those people back in. But on the other hand, they seem so grossly incompetent mm-hmm. on some of these things. It's like profiling, right? Conservatives like profiling. But the problem with profiling is you start looking at the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. So once the cops were profiling in New Mexico, they just started picking other people to mule drugs. Mm-hmm. It was easy. And so what happens if you start profiling? Well, there's a good chance the church is doing it, right? Because all the general authorities look exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Their system's screwed up. Obviously. So,
or, I mean, or it's not, or we see a flawed system and they're just working to repair it. They have come a long way.
They do have a German now.
Right.
I just have to say, what does it matter? I mean, so let's go ultra paranoid. Let's say I blog for Feminist Mormon Housewives. I'm doing a series on polygamy right now for the podcast, A Year of Polygamy. So I've been on all the Mormon sites. I'm sure I've got cookies on my computer. Facebook gives me all the LDS ads. So I'm Googling polygamy, Joseph Smith, polyandry, all the, you know, hot button words that they would be tracking. So let's say the church knows the post that I'm going to write before I write it. They collect all the data. They know where I've been. They've said it. Who cares?
Well, this is my point. There's all this paranoia, but how is it affecting anything? I think the church is greedy, like everybody else is, in collecting all this information. Look, when I get on the internet, when I get on Facebook, it's always trying to sell me something that I just bought online. Like it knows that I just bought a pair of shoes, but it's screwed up because it thinks that because I just bought a pair of shoes, I want to buy more shoes, right? Mm-hmm. And this is with this over greediness in information. Now I know what the data processors, the people who are driving this, are looking for, and they will tell you we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. What's coming around the corner is a little spooky, but we're not there yet. And I look at this and I say, okay, so the church collects all this data and whatnot. It's not, in my mind, it's not making any difference. They're not stemming the people leaving the church. They're not silencing all of you. Here we are in our fabulous studios.
Well, let me give you a good example with ordained women. So the church was highly preoccupied with ordained women. They even gave us Ruth Todd, a female spokesperson.
Did they ever use the word uppity anywhere in there?
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did in back meeting memos. But one of the things that, I mean, they were... There's all these rumors that they're tracking anyone that's involved now, and all these, you know, paranoid that people are getting turned into their bishops, whatever. So let's say the church is following them. We do know that they employed a strategy that ordained women was a thorn in their side. They had to put out multiple press releases to talk about it. And when it happened, the church was still blindsided by the fact that the women show up to the gate and Ruth Todd comes out to meet them. And she was like, hi, oh, you guys who can't come in, I'm sorry. We're not going to let you in. So why don't you press go home and you guys go home. And Kate Kelly said, oh, thank you, but no, we'd like to go ask for admittance at the door. And they said that Ruth Todd was just like baffled. Like, what? You're not supposed to do that. I told you no, go home. And she was completely like unnerved by it. And so they walk up to the door and the same thing, they ask the guy for the ticket and he says, no, I'm sorry, we won't let you in. And she said, well, then we'd like to stand here. They just didn't know what to do. They scattered around. You saw the picture of the garbage truck that pulls in front of the door. They didn't know what to do. And Kate says this at Counterpoint Conference. She said, the church expected us to show up, but they didn't expect us to be bold. Because Mormon women say, oh, you told me no, okay, I'll go sit back down. But that's the kind of stuff that they can't prevent. And I think it's so, it's
adorable, really.
Well,
they have an action plan.
Really.
Two of them would have kissed. They would have had that taken care of right away because that's a contingency they prepared for.
But they're not, you know, the systems are never perfect and they never will be perfect. It's the intent behind it. And like John said earlier, you know, it's the... I think, you know, the consensus is that the church is hemorrhaging members, and as they hemorrhage members, they've still got this very large asset pool, I guess. I mean, they've got a ton of stuff, and I don't think they're at the point where they're desperate. I think they're probably okay. They're still making tons of money, but you know, the concern is as they improve these technologies, and if members continue to hemorrhage, you know, then they will start getting desperate, you know, and they will start,
well,
who knows,
we see that,
you know, I don't know what that, you know, I don't know, but
they bumble and fumble all the time. Look at these, they're supposed to be putting these articles out, these 13 responses or whatever they've been doing over the past couple months. And every one of them has been a fumble. Like, every single one of them has backfired. Look, let me be clear. I am in favor of all of these systems. Everything we've talked about, I am a big fan of them. You know why? You cannot build a general authority tracking system unless you've already assumed what makes a good general authority. And they're going to keep pumping out the same bullshit they have been for 20 years.
Jar.
They're all these systems are built on assumptions and will have them looking in the wrong directions constantly. All the real threats are flying under their radar, and what they're doing is they're calcifying these systems around what they think. Look, let's be clear. They think they're the Church of God, and they cannot understand why people leave.
I disagree with you on that. They know exactly why people leave, and they do everything they can to.
But you have you have to have a huge conspiracy for that.
No,
because they get up in conference.
No,
and
I rode the bus for a number of years with a guy who worked in the department that would go out and interview people who left, or whoever he could, that do focus groups, that do all this stuff. He'd fly all over the world. You know,
the answer is simple. By the way, you don't have to skip to the end of the book. The church is not
right.
True.
That's why people leave.
So
he was trying to figure out why. Maybe, and he, you know, I never got all the details, but it kind of struck me that he was trying to figure out why did they decide the church was untrue? What can you know, he was an image consultant.
See, but even then,
I
believe what you're saying. But he's constructing. So, I cannot imagine like the project manager, like they've been, we've been on this $3.5 million project, and we've gone out and we've done all this research, and sit down, guys, so you can leave your jackets on, and here it is, the church is bullshit. You know, like I can't imagine.
If you go down to the River Tin Office building there, I bet you could pick any number of developers down there, and they'd tell you the church was bullshit.
The church
private.
Is full
you
of
know,
people
they,
who don't believe this.
Right, and the people
jars.
Who are working this, the people who are working. Inside the church, most of them know it's not true.
But that's
or most
too,
of them
you guys are
serious.
Oversimplifying. The church
well,
is so a giant
it's,
bureaucracy. So you have, regardless of the 12 believe or not, they have two outside PR teams, at least that we know of, that have come in, who are probably not believing. They don't care if the church is true or not. They're here to clean up the church's image.
I don't believe. I was very open with my disbelief when I was there. In fact, I talked to the managers on my projects that I was on that of my disbelief, it never nobody batted an eye at it and that asked me well why you know I'd tell them why and they're like yeah well I'm still making my paycheck type of thing
well because
so they know it's not true
we're dollar
you know?
Signs that's how
right,
they look at
all,
us
it's all money it's definitely all about the money
so the truth part is irrelevant that's what I'm
right,
saying so I don't even think that they care
no,
whether
they
believe
care.
Or not it's,
right.
it's
and that's why they're fine you know the first you know bumble on the essay that came out some weeks ago it wasn't a bumble it's a forward-looking effort. Right, they know all these problems. They've been attempting to hide all these problems, and now they're going to put it in there. It's in their vast wealth of public-facing information now, and it's amazing. I had a discussion with a coworker not long ago. Hopefully, he doesn't listen to this podcast, where I was talking about the racist remarks in the essay. You know, the racism of Brigham Young, how they kind of disavowed him. And he swore up and down that it never used the word racism in the essay. And I said, no, it absolutely used the word racism in the essay. I think it used it a couple times even, but it's definitely there. No, I read it through. We actually read it at church. It never used the word racism. And I went to look it up. I said, well, you know, I got my tablet here. Let's look this up now. Nope, I can't. I got to go. You know, I can't, you know, and we just had a 5-minute discussion on this. And so that's how they're going to do it. You know, that's, it's all about the money. They don't care about people leaving really. They care about new people having money and making it as hard as possible about people leaving. But once the people leave, what can they do about it?
I agree
right?
to an extent, but we're using the word they really loosely. And to it's a huge corporation.
It's a huge, right.
And
right.
there are people who absolutely, and I think most of them believe it's truth to some degree or another. And
they're all given little bits of information.
Right, right. This is what we know about the finances of the church. Like nobody, except maybe one or two people, know the entire financial situation of the church. That's why I push back on things like the $5 billion mall thing. Well, I doubt there's more than three people on the earth who even know what the price tag on that thing was. Because they can bury it underneath 100 different ways. Same thing happens here. So there's one element I teased that we need to circle back to, and then we can kind of finish up. I did say that I worked for quite a bit of time in law enforcement software. So people do get nervous about the church's law enforcement activities. I know a little bit about church security for various reasons, and they do the kind of security that you would expect any big company to do. You know, there are schizophrenics and suicidals and all sorts of weird people who hang around the church and the church properties.
It wasn't long ago. Didn't somebody kill somebody at the church library?
There was a shooting in the Triad Center. Is that what you're thinking about?
No,
Hoffman?
No, I thought somebody went into the library and shot somebody.
I don't know if there was one at the library recently, but in the Vegas Temple atrium.
I guess maybe it was less recently. Maybe it was a few years ago. I thought somebody went in and shot one of the volunteers at the library.
So these guys get threats.
So they stepped it up. Yeah.
This was a pivotal moment for me. I'm sorry. I probably told this story before, but when I was a BYU student, I worked for BYU police. And one time I was there at a game, and I had kind of risen through the ranks. I was a parking guy, and I had written a lot of tickets.
You're a powerful man, John.
I'm a powerful man. I'm ashamed to admit, I'm part of my repentance. I'd calculated one time in the 2.5 years I worked for parking enforcement at BYU, I wrote over 10,000 parking tickets.
How much money is that?
They probably average $20 a piece.
Nice.
So
you were a good man to have around.
Yeah, I could put on a Denver boot in like 45 seconds. I've always been a dick, is the point. Hinckley was the president at the time, decided to go to the game, and they drive these Lincolns, they're bulletproof Lincolns. So they brought the car into the stadium, and then he caught the elevators to go up over on the east side, if you've been in the Cougar Stadium, and they went up to the boxes. And then about third quarter, they wanted to leave, and they were coming down, and for some reason they got delayed. And there were like five other uniform guys, and I wasn't a gun-carrying uniform guy. There were about five others, and then the two church security guys. And the crowd got wind that Hinckley was there. And they surged. And this is a BYU football game, mind you. And these people were crying and screaming and pushing up against us. I got pushed back into the Lincoln, and we were just pushing back on the crowd as hard as we could. And I still remember there was a woman who was right over my shoulder trying to claw over me to get to the car, and she was just crying, just weeping and screaming. But what it tells me, what I realized at that point is this is real. Like, people take this very, very seriously. And so when you start mixing that with mental illness, that's what church security is dealing with. And the fact that, you know, I hear people made fun of because these guys have bodyguards. They should all have bodyguards. People are fucking nuts, and these guys should have bodyguards. And, that's what church security does mostly. They track the crazies, and they do personal security for these guys.
But you've also got to understand that church security is a cost center, right? That costs the church money.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
I just had to throw that out.
I do know, just from back when I worked for the police department, that their data structures that the church security uses, these are to track, you know, criminals and stuff, were isolated from every other system. So the idea that this is all like one big system, I can tell you from my personal experience, that's not true. So church security worked very, very independent from everybody else, and they were very protective of that.
And they're using like ex-FBI, ex-Secret Service.
Most of them were ex-cops, yeah.
And even on the projects I worked on, if you had to get data from another system, even if it was completely irrelevant or seemingly innocuous, there were forms that you'd have to fill out. There were signatures you'd have to get, and they would give you the bare minimum. So you'd have to query a database. You could maybe get an ID and maybe one or two other fields out of it. But that was like going from going from two systems that seemingly were innocuous. That's the level of compartmentalization they have. They are very strict with what data gets passed around within the organization.
Okay, so I think to wrap up, I think it's clear the church is doing what you would expect them to do if they were a corporation, and they're not doing what evangelicals would expect you to do if you run a church, but who the hell cares what the evangelicals think you should do to run a church? I mean, that's the point I was trying to make last podcast. I think the church is completely predictable and understandable on this front, and this is not surprising. And I think it's pretty clear that all this stuff isn't that – this is a waste of money, basically. You know, by tracking who Donny Osmond shakes hand with, is the gospel rolling forth in the world? No, this isn't working, guys. By having this database to track white guys who work for big corporations, is this helping bring about the Jesus fraternity? What are they working for these days? What's the end game here, Lindsay?
Strengthening the youth. I don't know.
So I would say for most of us, we really don't have that much to be scared of. And we've already pointed out that the system leaks and it's easy to manipulate. And I don't want the church being defrauded. I don't want the general authorities to get hurt. I don't want to subscribe to the enzyme.
You just don't want them to knock on your door. That's what you don't want.
If they have cookies, they can knock on my door.
Yeah, and I hope that they're reading my blog
there,
posts.
That gives
me more hits.
I could turn and I could be on the fireside circuit, right?
You could.
Oh,
I hope you will.
Bring gifts.
Come back to us, John.
A little bit of gin, some scotch. I'll sit down and listen to you.
Hopefully as an object lesson of what not to do, right?
No, gin is yummy.
I do like gin.
It's not as good as scotch, but...
I will disagree. I think gin is better than scotch.
Gin is a clear alcohol. Have people not learned that the clear alcohols stay clear of them? Okay. Any last thoughts from the rest of you?
I think you and Lindsay are painting a pretty rosy picture of the church's intentions. I certainly don't have that level of trust in that organization to say, it's benign. They're probably not going to do anything, and they're bumbling idiots, because I don't think that's the case.
That's a fair pushback. I'm not trying to say they're bumbling idiots. What I'm trying to say is what they're trying to do and the method they're trying to use it in, it's just not going to work, because the people who are the real threat to the church, they can't touch.
The people that are the real threat to the church are sitting in their church office building. They're their own worst enemies.
Absolutely. I'm not talking about like the people who don't believe, who might be there like sabotaging the circuit boards. What I'm talking about is these pompous assholes who think that every thought that pops into their head is God talking and will drive these programs to billions of dollars worth of nonsense.
If John goes missing in the next 24 hours for saying that it's nonsense, then you guys can report it to the authorities.
Out of everything I've said, I don't think this is the one they're going to go. Because I'm basically saying, don't be afraid of the church's data collection. Go ahead, man.
So I get what you're saying, that the church may have nefarious intentions. You know, they
mean well.
They mean well, but it may not be as benign as some have said. But here's the thing. They may have all of these exotic systems, these tracking databases, all of this information. But when the rubber hits the road, it kind of breaks down. And I think the ordained women circumstance is a perfect example of that. They tracked everything they were doing. They knew who was involved. They knew what they were going to do. They knew when they were going to do it. They knew they were coming. They sent out their press releases. Everything was clicking. And then when they go up and approach the ordained women and say goodbye, and they say no, we're here to go, then everything falls apart, because what do we do?
They put a garbage truck
right
in front of the door. That's what they do.
They're not going to send out the Gestapo.
I agree with what you're saying, that the church cannot see into the future. They're not clairvoyant and they don't have the power of discernment. But they learn well, right? I mean, as a big organization, they learn and they grow and they become more sophisticated. I'd be interested to see next year when the ordained women go and try to get in.
They're doing it this April, yeah.
This April. It'll be interesting to see how they handle that differently, because this was a first time anything like that has happened. Well, so it's no surprise
talk about that issue for example? So Kate was talking about, I think it was actually Chelsea Strayer that said, the church really lost a PR war because Desert News, the church's own paper, puts out a headline that says, "Church turns away women." That's the headline, okay? That is like the worst PR ever. All they had to do was come and say, "Okay, come on in and we'll put you in standby," or whatever. Game over. These women look kind of foolish for showing up, but they didn't. They had to hold on to their thing, and they lost the PR war because they were too prideful. And I'm embarrassed for them that they're putting that much money into their PR, and they get a headline in their own paper that says "Church turns away women."
They don't know what to do. And we recorded Mormon Expression Live. There was a protest three or four years ago around the block in Temple Square. I can't remember what kicked it off. And it was a gay rights issue, and people surrounded the block. They just like held hands or just kind of sat there. But the church like locked the whole thing up. They shut those big ass metal gates. And I remember those church security guys sitting there behind the fence. It's like this is like the worst possible thing you could do. They kicked everybody off of Temple Square, and then they were standing
there. And didn't they record some? I think this was like there were some gay men like kissing or something, and they had getting this big security kerfuffle that gets on the news, shows these guys bullying these people.
That was when the kissing plaza opened up.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like hiding in the bushes, and they came. yeah. So I mean, I love it when the church responds.
Like the armies of Helaman.
But you know, that's not the PR war. That's a PR skirmish. You know, and they're learning from it, right? They're getting better at it. I mean, right? You know, just today I saw legislation that the church is rah-rah, we're supporting not firing gays and letting them live in the city in houses.
Wow.
And just so long as they're not near a church, *, right? So they're not, you know, I don't think what you saw in the past, these little flubs that they've made or that have been made by the church, you're not going to see those going forward. They're going to get better and better, just like, and they've been doing that for 150 years.
But they're losing. I mean, what is it that they said in the latest research that was done that was printed in the Salt Lake Tribune, that the church has got like 4 to 5 million active members out of what they claim?
That's probably about right.
They're not going anywhere. It's just...
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe. Keep tracking me.
I'm gonna stay paranoid.
I want to see my file. All right, well... as always, the discussion continues over at the website at MormonExpression.com. You can come down and check out our studio and hear a live recording most Tuesday nights in Salt Lake City at 7 p.m.
See John fill up the swear jar.
You can see the swear jar as it fills up and hang out with us. So the studio is at 423 West 800 South. A suite 110A. Right, Lindsay? Is it hard to find?
It's not hard to find. Maybe the church
can find
us. You
might feel like you're going through a bad part of town for a while, but it gets better before you get to the studio.
I feel marginally safe right now.
Thank you. This is a safe space. Right? I want to hear a feminist tell me that this is a safe space. Lindsay.
This is not a safe feminist space.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
They're all eyes are on.